Rachel didn't tell my joke, which I wrote in my bio, which was, he joined to help create affordable housing, saying to himself, how hard could this be?
Oh.
So, it can be hard. Okay, so this is the Halibut Point Cottages, formerly known as the Old City Shops. And so that's, I'm just telling you the name that we have selected to, and this is the site. You can see Burgess and Vicky's vet clinic there, and there are the seven small lots that make up this half of the neighborhood. We were given this first portion of three lots, which make up the Old City Shops. And when we prove up on this, there's intent language in the ordinance to grant us the rest of the property. So you know that this was devoted by referendum a decade ago or so by the community to serve affordable housing purposes. It was given to us in the Sitka Community Land Trust in 2015, and that we received a large Rasmussen grant to do the site work on all parcels there. $500,000 for the two sites. $234,000 here for the rock wall, the excavation, the site prep, the sewer, the water, the electrical, all the stuff under the ground that Rasmussen Foundation is paying for, which makes a huge difference in being able to provide affordable housing. As you know, also, those of you who have lived in the town long, that this was once a state and then a city industrial site with a wide range of industrial functions there, and that it had been contaminated and then remediated in 2000, 2006 and 7 is when they completed the remediation, and the DEC final report said no further remediation action is required and the property is cleared for redevelopment. 2 weeks ago, in putting in the sewer line, we discovered contaminated soil. A week ago, in putting in the water line, we discovered more contaminated soil. So we have about 80 to 100 cubic yards of material of an unknown material. It's likely the same stuff that they remediated, and the testing was done in the 06 and 07. It's likely the same stuff, which means largely petroleum-based stuff. And so we have 80 to 100 cubic yards in that range of stuff pulled out and, you know, covered with plastic, and we're waiting. But just so you know what that 100 yards is like, this room is just barely above 1,000 cubic yards, okay? So it's not that much material, but it's expensive to deal with, right? So when we discovered this stuff, which was my great fear, by the way, in accepting this site for affordable housing, I've lived in some degree of fear that we would run into the pockets of contaminant that, you know, we were warned there could be some stuff still there, even though it was cleaned up. You know, we knew that there could be some stuff, but the report sounded so good and that we accepted the site, but we accepted it. The city required us to accept responsibility for any further discovered environmental contaminant as a condition of accepting the property. We resisted that as long as and hard as we could, and then we said, all right, we'll just take the gamble that it's clean. We took that gamble. By the way, the DEC says that you can't waive environmental responsibility. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation does not recognize waiver of environmental responsibility. I'm not saying that to make a legal argument with the city, who are our greatest partners in all of this. We're going to work with the city and see what we can do. Okay, so first, the contaminants discovered do not represent a threat to human habitation on the site. Kids can play in the dirt there. They can eat the dirt. It's going to be fine. One DEC official said, you can roll around in this. It's just higher than DEC current standards. And those standards have risen since the time that the remediation was done in 2006, right? So samples are off, being tested, and we'll know in 2 or 3 weeks what we have and kind of then what our path forward is and what the cost of that is. That path forward is there's four potential things that we can do. We can put it in containers and ship it to some site up the Columbia River Gorge. To do that, in the worst case scenario, my contractor, Chris Bolovich, says if this was not just petroleum-based stuff, but something more heinous, it could be $60,000 to $90,000. So that's sort of the, and shipping it out. So that's sort of the worst case scenario from what we now know. I'm just trying to quantify the, what's happening here. So that's one option. The city could take it to their site and work on it, but they say, no, we don't have room for it. We don't want it. The state has many thousands of cubic yards of material out on Millersville from the pool job. And I've spoken with their engineer, and it's not impossible that the Corps of Engineers and the Department of Transportation would accept a, you know, a little more material and take it out on a barge, and you know, we might potentially. It depends on what the test results are. Theirs is strictly petroleum-based contaminants, and if ours was something worse, they don't want anything to do with it. And it seems far-fetched anyway that any government, any federal government agency would accept anybody else's contaminated soil. But we'll try. We'll push on that door and see if it opens, you know. The last and probably the most likely scenario is to bury it under a parking lot. We have two large parking lots, you know, on the site, and you make what they refer to as a burrito. You dig a big basin and you put a big tarp down, you fill it in, you wrap it up, and you cover it with enough material to keep it safe, and you park on it. And if it's just petroleum-based material that represents no harm to human habitation, that giant parking lot under the 2005 slide area that we're not going to put houses, that'd be a great place for it. So those are our four options of how to deal with this. And now, how do we pay for it is a really very different question. It is my view that the seven young families that buy these homes as affordable homes should not bear the financial impact of, but we don't have money, the nonprofit, you know, we don't, there's no way. Mim is our only employee, she works a quarter time, the rest of us are volunteers. We can't pay for this. So we could add it on to the cost of those houses. But if we do that, we're asking seven young families to bear the economic brunt of pollution that was happening before they were born and for decades, and that we sort of community-wide are, I think, responsible for, because it was our cities and folk over in past years that did that, right? So it'd be my view that that's not really a fair solution. So we'll work with the assembly to see if there is a fair solution. So we've been keeping them in the loop. They know what's happening, and we will keep talking to them. Okay, so I'm going to stop and ask for questions right now, because the whole reporting of the contamination is one chapter of my talk, and then I'm going to move on to happier things. And so, does anyone want to ask a question about what I've said so far?
Is there any recourse to go back to who the contractor was that tore down those buildings and suggested that, that the DEC contaminant was all taken care of?
No idea. I really don't want to take on, how are we going to take on a legal battle to work with the past stuff? It just seems complicated, and we might be able to come up with a simpler solution. Yeah.
That was my question. So, but why would it be a legal battle? Sometimes people actually take responsibility when they do something wrong and they neglect.
Well, okay, but we have a DEC report saying the site is cleaned up and pronounced ready for redevelopment. They're just going to say, well, the DEC said, and I mean, it's been long enough ago that it seems like it could be a bit of a morass. I wouldn't mind asking, but it doesn't seem optimistic that somebody that many years ago would stand up and say, we're going to do the right thing. Here's your $50,000, you know. So it just seems unlikely. John?
Wouldn't the city have been insured for this?
Well, that's a good question. Maybe.
Insurance for a $25,000 hole in one for
$300. Unknown. Yeah. The city have been great to work with on this, the DEC folk as well, by the way. It was really interesting. We call over there and tell them, and the first thing they said was, oh, I am so sorry. Okay, and here's how we can help, and here, you know, and they begin to, they act like allies in solving the problem at this point. So that is good. Any other questions about contaminant disposal, this kind of issue? Yes, Rob.
What would it take to bury it under the
cost, you mean?
Yeah, well, what is it? Do you require some additional permitting to get the burrito?
I don't think so. Well, I don't really know. I think that what you have to do is it ends up simply being like a plat note, warning, there's stuff down here. And by the way, there is a place in a parking lot on the SJ campus where this is true today, the DEC said. I don't know for sure which parking lot. I don't know. Do you?
Yeah.
Which one? Is it the Hames PE Center parking lot?
No, it's the one that's on the Summer Music Festival property.
Oh. Okay, that one. Yeah.
That's the first instance of a contaminated soil burrito I've ever heard of.
Yeah. Okay. So, and that would be relatively inexpensive. So, Michael, then I'll come to you, ma'am.
Just as another example, with the new pool being built, they obviously did some environmental remediation, but they removed some things, but they also capped some things, too. So there's a variety of different methods that they use these days to do that remediation.
Yeah. I was going to just suggest you mention about what we would do under the houses.
Oh, yes. So we also are going to add more fill to separate ourselves from what's down below, and then under the houses themselves, you put what's called positive ventilation. There's the so that if fumes were to arise, they wouldn't build up under a house. There would be a fan blowing outward at all times, so they just ventilate. It's a precaution that they mentioned and simple to do. And yeah, and with regard to when we dug the sewer pipe, that's where we dug deeper and it was dirtier. And the DEC is completely unconcerned for having contaminated soil around a sewer pipe. But around a water pipe, it's a different deal. The water pipes used now are, they're an oil-based substance, poly whatever. Anyway, Dan would know. Anyway, and those could theoretically degrade from oil contaminant around them. So there's a higher standard around drinking water, of course. And so we had raised that line up to the minimum to avoid freezing in order to try to avoid any material, but we still got into some. It was less dirty. So we've done those steps, and now we're standing still. The contractor is somewhat frustrated and moving on to other jobs while we wait for test results, and then a plan will be formed, and then we will execute the plan. Anything else? Okay. I'm going to move on to talking about happier things, because that was unhappy. I've lain awake about this one some, folks. I lived in dread that we would discover the whole time we accepted this site, and when we did, it's been unhappy. Okay, so we have an architect working on plans, and we've hired Northwind Architects and particularly Ben Kraft, who many of you would know, Rich Kraft, a physician of many years at Search, and this is his oldest son who did his master's thesis work on affordable housing in Southeast Alaska. And he started coming to our board meetings, and he's really interested, and pretty soon we hired him to do this work. So do I have a clicker? I can click, right?
Well, let me show you what you got.
This is unrehearsed.
These are the two.
Okay, two views. Files. Yeah, okay. So what we have designed are 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes. The largest will be a 3-bedroom, 1,100 square foot home. We've made them as compact as possible while trying really hard to make them livable. So let's start right there. There's what we think is the most, the model which will be most in demand is likely the 2-bedroom home for a starter for a family. And so it has a relatively spacious downstairs, you know. It's just there it all is on the left. And then 2 bedrooms and a bathroom up. And downstairs has a nice entry and a little half bath. And so they're complete homes that are really cozy in terms of their design, right? And There's only, you know, it's the primary way that a land trust model offers affordable homes. There's really just two ways that initial affordability is achieved. There's no land cost, and the houses are small. It's just that simple. And these are just going to be built by local builders. And we're getting some pricing. We've been working with people to have them give us input on the designs as the designs emerge. And their architectural firm also... The head architect still occasionally puts on a tool belt and goes out and pounds nails. So I like that because I think that an architect who is a builder also yields much more practical plans. Some architecture can be pretty esoteric and not necessarily inexpensive to build. So we're pleased with these plans, and we hope that somebody will be building these even, I don't want to say a month now. I would have said August before, but now I'm not really sure. It depends on, you know, test results and what we can do with the contaminant and everything. But we're held up for a month, but we have at least three known people who are applying to buy these homes based on rumors of prices, and I'll tell you some prices a little later here, and other people inquiring, and another young family asked me yesterday, what's the deal, how do we, you know, so if we get some homes, some little homes down at the price points that we want to reach, we are going to, they will do well. And this is the one bedroom. There is a full and complete home right there. It also has, you can see a set of steps, which would be optional. So a set of steps would go up to a storage loft in some of the models. We can build it this way with no steps and no storage loft, or put the storage loft up as well to create a little bit of space. It's a habitable space, but it is not a bedroom. It cannot be, and well, wait, is this one a bedroom? If the steps... It depends on the stairway. We can put a window to provide emergency egress from a bedroom, but to provide a set of steps at a low enough angle to be, code, takes a lot of room, a lot of floor space. And so I think this is our more like a captain's ladder up to a storage loft kind of room. So the plan that Ben Kraft has come up with, the basic plan, we can expand and contract it readily and inexpensively to create a bunch of different kinds of homes for people. Okay? So maybe I should show what our price point stuff right here, and then we'll end with So here's what we're trying to do, folks. This is what we want to do in terms of pricing. This is not a quote. This is not a promise. This is based on numbers that we think we can do. And there's something. Okay, so what are those costs?
Will you make it bigger so we can see it?
Will I, or Mim will?
Yeah.
My tech department will.
Thank you.
So that one bedroom, 650 foot home would cost, assuming the following things: 5% down, 5.5% interest. I got insurance quotes used tax quotes. So PITI, about $1,200 a month for that home. $1,200 a month, PITI, for a home to buy. Now, what we try to match, our pricing targets are, what are people paying for rent? If we can provide a 1, 2, or 3-bedroom home at or below rental value, then we consider that a win. That's where we're trying to get, because we're trying to help people get out of rental and into home ownership so they can begin to accrue some equity and get started, get out of the trap of rentals. And in the city of Sitka, there are far more people renting than an average American town. Small and rural American towns, about 72% of Americans are buying their own homes in small and rural America. In Sitka, it's 56%, right? So if you take all those numbers and you pull out the Coast Guard, who are necessarily households who are renting almost always, right? So they kind of skew your data. Pull them out of there, and what it comes down to as a raw number is 440 families in Sitka are renting who, in a normal American small town, would be buying. Right? That's a lot of families. And when they get to be my age, what are they going to do? The largest asset people tend to have in middle America is the equity in their home. What are they going to do? It's a terrible thing. And so we think that if we can give them, if they pay the same amount per month, and they can buy a home on the community land trust model instead of renting, then that's a win. So that's where we're trying to get, that's what we're trying to do. Dan?
And your price per square foot for the three bedroom is a lot lower than the other two. Is that the only one that's a two-story?
No, all of them are one and a half or two-story. The square footage price is less. Okay, that probably has not to do with the math of the price per square foot given by a builder, but what we will take some kind of an administrative fee for these homes, and it might be in there that difference exists.
No big deal. I'm just curious if there was some magic there.
The homes are less, the smaller they are, the more they're going to cost per square foot, because a big home, the fact that you add 20 more square foot of open living room, it doesn't cost as much as the 20 square foot of the kitchen, which is similar in all of them. Yeah, good question. Other questions about the plans or what we're trying to get done here? And again, this is the first time we've written down numbers and put them up hard in front of anyone, and I'm nervous about it. And Lillian, who's a banker and on our board, is probably really ticked off at me right now that I've done this. This is one of the problems the board has.
We see what that number
says. Yeah, so see what I mean? Anyway, because we have a builder look at these plans and give us some numbers. I know they're based at least in one builder's view of what they could do. So I think these are close. And it's certainly our goal to get done. Okay, questions about any of that? Plans, costs? Yes, John.
What would an alternative cost be if you did them as a modular house?
Well, I don't know. I can't give you a number, but we, Travis Vaughn came and did a talk to our board about modulars, and we ended up not feeling like it was the right thing for us. The cost savings didn't, in my view, warrant the loss of local employment to have people build them here. It's always been my hope that local builders would build, and that's good for all of us. And so we could probably find some ways in modulars to save some money. We looked them at as a board and decided not to go that way for a range of reasons.
If the land does not belong to the people, it's more of a community, who takes care of the land?
There will be a homeowners association that will deal with that question. They will collectively. They're going to live closer together and have some common green space, closer together than most American neighborhoods put people. These are 4,000 and under square foot lots, half of R1 size. R1 is 8,000 square foot, and this is so half of that and smaller. They're cozy together with common green space, common parking, and there won't be fences between the lots, and people are going to live together in ways that they have not been required to by most American neighborhoods. And thus, one of our selection criteria, secondary selection criteria, is some evidence that people know how to live together. And we don't really care if they, if they were in a commune or the Elks Lodge or a church or some way that they show that they can know how to be around people. Convince us that you're going to be a good neighbor is one of the selection criteria. Again, there's a whole list of them, and that's down the list of ways. Okay. And what?
I said, are you going to interview their old neighbors?
ooh. Good idea. Good idea. Yes. Other questions about this so far? This has gone a little quick. Yes?
Is there anything in the bylaws? I know they probably haven't been written up. If you have one owner that's not doing his share or causing all problems, is there going to be something in the homeowner's rules that you can get him to leave?
Wow. When they own it, it's harder, right? Yeah. So the answer is really I don't know, because we're researching a homeowners association. We will take one somebody has developed and says this one works and is good, and we're going to use it as a blank template to tweak to these circumstances. And I bet that that's not an uncommon problem. So I would think that homeowners associations would probably have a way to address the really genuinely terrible neighbor. But I don't know that, Roger. I'm making that up. Okay? Other questions?
What about pets?
It's homeowners association question. Mm-hmm. Right? We don't intend to impose their living conditions. We remain vested in the properties because we want to ensure that they are maintained and can be resold, and people cannot change them without any change which requires a building permit requires our permission. We don't want people to add on a bedroom when little Jimmy comes along. We want them to move out and have the next small family start there, right? So we don't want them to grow and to be too expensive. So we're going to be careful about that. Okay. Yes, Roger, again.
I remember reading they'll get equity based on how long they've been there when they sell in.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily based on how long they've lived there. It's a percentage of the change in the appraised value. They get 25% of the change in appraised value during their time of ownership, plus their down payment and any equity that they bought by their payment.
And that's based on how long they've been there.
Well, it is, but not necessarily, because the market could go up abruptly and they'd earn a lot.
They've been paying on their loan.
Yes, yeah. It is. But yeah. it's appraisal based, just like the real world. And they can lose money. They can lose money on the house, right? It's just appraisal based. So that means that if the house is bought at $200,000 and 10 years later is appraised at $300,000, they get $25,000 of equity plus their down payment plus any equity that they paid down. So it's not a lot, but it's a great deal better than rental, and they've been writing off their interest in their taxes. So there are gains here, and it is our hope that by doing this first step on the ladder out of rental that they can get out in the open market and capture the equity like they need to. But they're stuck now, so that's the vision. Yes?
Is there any income requirements for people living in there?
Sure. Income limitations. So we follow HUD standards. So what this means is area median income times 120% is our, so, and that varies by household size according to the HUD formula. So area median income is approaching $80,000 in a household. And so in ballpark numbers, you know, $95,000 of household income. But again, it varies by, you can have a higher number if you have a family of five, right? So 120% times area median income is the cap. If you want to just think about that in rough numbers, you have to look at the chart to get there exactly. But we see the problem as not being in Sitka just a low-income problem. It's a median income problem and low-income problem, right? If you are a single-income family, how do you get there? So when I came to Sitka, I've probably told this story too many times, but we came as a single-income teaching family, and I bought a house because there was nothing to rent in 1990, and by nothing I mean zero. We could not find a rental, and we wanted to rent because we didn't know if you'd like Sitka. There were two houses on the market we could afford, and we bought one of them. It was one of the mill houses on Lakeview Drive. Bought it for $106,000 in 1990. It was 2.5 times my annual salary for that home. If you take the same teacher, master's degree, 4 years teaching experience on a pay scale that's been floating with the economy, that same teacher in that same cell, the average home being sold in Sitka today is between 6 and 7 times that salary. So when people say, oh, it's always been tough to get started in Sitka, nothing's any different, that's not true. It has changed dramatically over the time that I've been here, the affordability of home, getting into home ownership. Okay? I'm going to move on to the next topic and wrap up. Okay, so happy news. We got a nice grant. The Catholic Campaign for Human Development is a Catholic Church function that's been around for a long time, and they have awarded the Sitka Community Land Trust $43,500 a year for 3 years, and it's mostly for for payroll, for salaries. This is great because most grants want to be in the project, and they want to, bricks and mortar grants are easier to get than payroll. And a few other things that they'll pay for. There's nothing in there for environmental damage. Mim and I are about to be co-EDs, co-executive directors of the Sitka Community Land Trust. So my time as a volunteer is coming to an end, and I'm going to go to an underpaid part-time employee. But that's a big step up from doing 60 hours a month of high-pressure volunteer work. So we're very thankful for that, and that's the good news and where I will wrap up. Yes.
Can you see a picture of the three bedroom?
He didn't send one.
No, you can't. It looks a lot like the two bedroom.
So another bedroom?
Yeah. you're a quick study. Yes. Failure. Oh. Okay, we learned tons. So let me circle back and wrap that one. The Lillian Drive, we had cost overruns on the part of the builder. Initial bid price of $243,000. It was always going to be more than that. It was always going to be in the mid-250s to about 260 when it got done. The price is 310 now, and at that price, in the model doesn't make sense as a community land trust home. If you can afford that, then you shouldn't be buying a community land trust home, right? Because there's the profit-taking limitation. So was a problem. So we have, through James Polson, who's on our board's hard work, come up with a way to make this go forward. And we have someone, a buyer, that's moving through the process nicely. I think this works, where they buy the home at $30,000 less than appraised value, and a deed restriction for $35,000 goes on the deed so that the home has to sell again in the future for $35,000 less than the appraised value. So we produced some affordability, and we preserve that affordability over time in this mechanism. They are going to buy the house and the land. It's not a community land trust home. As also a condition of that deed, we have the option of first refusal, is that what it's called? Right. We can buy it. Yeah, and so if, somehow or another we were a wealthy nonprofit, we might buy that house back and buy down some value and put it back on the market as a community land trust home in the future. But boy, oh boy, did we learn a lot. the organization and myself in particular were very naive in a contract we signed and a whole series of things that we learned about that. It was an excellent education, and we are a far more qualified organization and board to go forward. I'm happy that that all happened on a single home rather than on seven at once, right? And then we have strengthened our board with folks like Lillian, who is a banker, and who she would never have allowed us to sign that contract, I promise you. She wouldn't have. And so there you go. We've salvaged some affordability, preserved over time. We failed to produce a community land trust home, and we got a great education. Yes, it's being the city is exerting pressure on them, and they are cleaning. It's getting better, and I don't really know where that ends. But there's a property adjacent out the main windows toward the light and the sun and everything that looks into a piece of property that you don't want to look into. It's been used sort of as an industrial storage site of old junk that was just too good to throw away. I'll stop there because I could say some bad things, inappropriate things. I don't know how to answer that, I don't know how to answer that.
Just call it a good education.
That's all we're going to do. Yeah, I'm going to just pass on trying to give an answer to that question. Sorry. Yes, John.
So do you have a bank that's going to give you a $1 million construction loan?
Yes. The Rural Community Assistance Corporation is a nonprofit lender that the Rasmussen Foundation has sent us to. And they are will be our lenders. They do things like this. The Rasmussen Foundation has $2 million on deposit with them and has sent them to us and said, help them. And we, in order to qualify for the funding that they have for us, we have to have the homes pre-sold. And so we have to have kind of a letter of commitment from people. So we're moving as fast as we can to get those plans sold to people, and then we will build them as they're already sold and for a set price. You know, it's all going to be pinned down so tight.
Is anybody in Sitka willing to commit to buy something that they can't see?
Well, we have three people applying. I believe the answer is yes. They haven't written a check, though. It hasn't been done in Sitka, as far as I know. No one, and we've been uneasy about this, right? Buy a picture? You know, people, our realtor friends.
Or even here's a model.
Yeah. Our realtor friends say it just hasn't been done, and it's really hard to do. But we don't really have any choice. So we're just charging forward. And it's done elsewhere. This is not rare. Buy a floor plan. You know, and so I think as long as we can get to the prices that we're showing there, that it'll overcome that. People really, really want to buy houses and can't. So I believe we'll be okay.
Well, I don't agree. I think people do it all the time because when you have your builder draw you out a plan, you haven't seen the house.
True. When you're doing a custom home and you work with them on the design and everything and it become maybe, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but most people, when you go through that, they'll say, well, this is kind of like what you're going to look at. When you visit this home, we'll be back. Because, it's an interesting situation. It's like the market that you're going to typically won't stay there for a long time because they'll outgrow it. They're in a situation where they have basically unlimited limited upside, and they're looking at, in this market, you're looking at people where now there's a lot of activity in the mobile home market.
Yeah.
The $70,000. So you're starting to see people.
Yeah.
I guess the question is, will people come up and say, I'll spend $185,000?
The next time I speak to Chamber, I will be able to answer that question. Yes, Jen.
I'm just wondering, how much say do the people purchasing the home have to do with what goes inside the home? I mean, simple things as far as wall color or what kind of faucet or what kind of refrigerator.
Yeah, some. We want to provide, since they're pre-selling and we can do that, we want to provide inside of the home in particular some choices of color. And, you know, and so what we imagine is like a palette of floor cover. It's going to be a vinyl, but here's your choices. And it's going to be this brand of paint, here's your colors. On the outside, we're trying to create a neighborhood that it fits together, so we're really not going to extend very much freedom there. But on the inside, we'd do it as much as we can. Yes, we've certainly been discussing that
is
kind of thing.
Is it something that the person can spend more to get what they want, or is it?
Well, I don't know how to answer that because that's been discussed, and I don't know. I want this to be a simple administrative thing for us, right? And I don't want a single change order for the rest of my life. And so I'm nervous about how far we go down that way. Yes?
If you finish Dallas 1 and go to the second phase, how many units would be in the second phase?
About the same. Because we had 6 in the first and 6 in the second in our initial plans that we presented to the assembly and said, you know, give us the land, we'll give you this neighborhood. But we were able to squeeze 7 into this first half. The other site, of course, has the 05 slide and the emerging regulations are, concerning that. And so one of the ordinances has to do with being 150 feet from a slide area, and we're going to be in that with some of those homes. And so it gets a little more complicated. I hope that we're doing about the same number. And I see my time is up. Thanks, y'all. Yeah.